Good afternoon, Wealthy Web Writers. I'm Heather Robson, Managing Editor of Wealthy Web Writer, and I am excited to have Ed Gandia here with us today. I've known Ed for quite some time. I'm an avid follower of his own blog on his website, and I gotta say, you know, some of the articles that I share, like my most shared articles, actually come from Ed. He's a wonderful writer. A wonderful teacher. He knows the business-to-business industry like nobody's business, and he's going to be talking to us today about how to conduct a great interview, which is an essential skill if you want to write case studies, but it can come in useful in so many different situations. So I think this is such a great topic. Ed, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So before we actually dig into the meat of our interview, I just wanted you to take a couple minutes and just kind of tell people how you got into first copywriting and then from there coaching.
Absolutely. So I came from the business-to-business world, really corporate sales, software sales, industrial sales, and I kind of fell into copywriting. The short version of the story is that I was always in very difficult sales situations where my employer either couldn't or wouldn't give me the marketing and sales materials that I needed, so I figured I'd write my own. And they were very effective. In some cases, they were literally putting money in my pocket. And I fell in love with this idea that I could write something, and it was salesmanship on paper. Eventually, I came across in my search for how do I get better at this, the AWAI Accelerated Program for Six-Figure Copywriting. And that's when I, leading up to that, I kind of suspected, but that's when I realized that this is a business, so that you could make a living doing this. So I made the decision to start my business on the side while I kept my day job, look for non-competing companies that I could do this kind of writing for. And, the rest is history. I transitioned over a period of about 2.5-3 years while I kept my day job. And my target market was the software industry, mainly because I had been in IT by that time for many years. And I just, you know, I would just leverage what I knew, which is always something I recommend people do. The reason I ended up in coaching, which is where I spend 95% of my time and energy these days, at least it's actually getting closer and closer to 100%, is along the way I put together information that I thought would help people. Because when I was transitioning, there wasn't much out there in terms of how do I do this and how do I do this safely and quickly. I was my family's sole breadwinner. I can't afford to just quit my day job and build this thing on the side. So I was set on this idea that, you know what, when I get out there and succeed, I'm going to teach others how to do that. And it was just really based on a passion because I knew that this information wasn't out there. And little by little, first of all, that idea just took off. And little by little, I realized that I really enjoyed teaching and coaching others. And over the past 10 years or so, I've gradually transitioned into doing more and more of that. And it's really where I have most of my passion. I still have one client that I do some work for in terms of actual copywriting. But most of my work these days is spent in teaching writers and copywriters how to launch and grow their writing businesses.
Excellent. And I mentioned right at the beginning, and we're going to get into the meat of the interview here in just a minute, but I mentioned right at the beginning that I share a ton of the things that you write about on your website, and I just want to make sure that everybody here has a chance to visit that website. And so it's B2B Launcher?
Yeah, B2BLauncher.com. That's where all my free stuff resides. Most of what I put out there is free, very actionable stuff, and some of it is written. I also have I have a newsletter. I have a blog, and I have a podcast, which is
one of
the top podcasts on writing in iTunes. But the home base for all of that is B2BLauncher.com. Yes, thank you. Bad self-promotion on my part, not mentioning that.
No worries. I always, for whatever reason, I want to put info in there, which is why I paused. I'm like, oh, it's just B2B Launcher. because I'm there regularly, but for some reason the word info gets in there sometimes. All right, so our topic today that I had you on for is conducting a great interview. And I specifically want to talk about conducting interviews for case studies, but there are really so many situations as writers where our job is just easier if we really know how to conduct a good interview. I mean, any project you do involves an interview at the beginning to gather information. So I think this is an undervalued skill among writers, and I'm really excited to have you talk about it today. So just kind of starting out, how important is the preparation process when you're conducting an interview?
Yeah, so before I tell you that, I want to underscore what you just said in terms of don't think of this just as case study interviews, because you're right, you're going to be in so many situations as a writer where you're going to need to interview people. And I can think of three situations right off the bat. There's the interviewing the client for like a project kickoff call, which I always recommend people do. It's like, okay, you've landed the project. Now let's schedule a kickoff call to gather all the information, talk to all the people who are going to be involved in reviewing the draft and providing information. The second one would be kind of a subset of that, which is interviewing subject matter experts, especially when you're doing things that require research, things like such as white papers, for instance. There's a good chance you'll have to interview someone at your client's company separately from the kickoff call. And then, of course, there's the case study interview. If you're doing a case study and you need to interview your client's customer, and there will be other opportunities as well. But I don't, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because you need to think about this more broadly. Even if you're thinking, well, I don't really want to write case studies, you're going to need this skill, and it's something it takes time to develop. You know, in terms of prepping, I find that prepping is where 80% is. I mean, if you prep well, you position yourself for a successful interview, especially if you're kind of new to interviewing, if it feels awkward to you, you don't have a lot of experience doing that, or if you're introverted and the thought of just getting on the phone with somebody either terrifies you or you don't feel very comfortable doing as much. You know, I was in corporate sales for a long time, as I mentioned, and even to me, just getting on the phone with a client, even to this day, it's a little, I get a little
moment.
Nervous. Yeah, I still get a little nervous, but I find that prepping brings that down. Because I get anxious up until the moment that I start prepping. When I start prepping, it's kind of like I can see the lay of the land, and I can see where this could go, and my anxiety goes way down. So can't recommend prepping enough. Not only will it make you feel better, but it will turn a potentially mediocre interview into a great one. Couple of practical tips in terms of how to prepare. You want to reach out to the other party, the other person, ahead of time. You want to make sure that you explain the purpose of the interview as you see it. Don't overlook that. It might seem obvious, but just throw it in there. Hey, this is how I understand we're going to use our time. This is the purpose of our conversation. Get it out there. You'd be surprised how many times you think you're going in to talk about something, and then you realize through some email exchange that actually that's no longer the case. We need to talk about this or whatever. For the other party, especially if you're interviewing a subject matter expert, people are so busy that you're going to help them understand what this is about, where it fits in their priorities, and all that good stuff. So reaching out to that person via email is the first thing. The second thing I would say is to just do your homework. Get whatever it involves, depending on the type of interview. Get information from the client, anything that they can send you ahead of time that you can pour over. Learn about the person or the company, their role, the topic, how they might answer the questions. So any background information you have that, well, even if you decide you're going to ask these questions anyway, if you have the background information, you're going to be better prepared, because this is not going to feel or sound completely new, right? So it's going to sound familiar, and you're going to be able to pay more attention because this is not new information that you have to take all down. In terms of questions, I'm a big believer in sending questions to the interviewee ahead of time. just a practice that I've adhered to forever, and I find that it really helps. You don't want to wing this, number one, and you also don't want to spring things up on the interviewee. So do them a favor. People are busy. Show them what you're going to ask them so they can better prepare. And you don't, you never know. I mean, you think you're anxious. The other person, the interviewee, might be the one who's really anxious. And if you can show them the questions ahead of time, right, it's going to make it a lot easier on them. So those are some really practical things. I would say a couple of others is to, from a logistical standpoint, use a scheduling tool to make things easier. This is more of a newer development. When I started out doing this, there wasn't such a thing. But now we have tools such as TimeTrade, Calendly. There's a few others out there that essentially they link to your calendar so that you can send an interviewee a link where they can, when they click on it, opens up a browser, it goes to a page where they can select a time that works for them, and that avoids a lot of the back and forth. Especially in corporate America, you're going to lose people at that stage if there's a lot of back and forth, because then your email is going to get lost. And if that takes, you know, 4 or 5 emails to go back and forth with, there's a good chance that you're going to lose them. And then suddenly it's really frustrating because by the time they do get back to you, now the spots that you did suggest are now taken, and now you have to offer some new ones, and it's just a vicious cycle. So use a scheduling tool. And then finally, one thing, this is all, again, during the prep, as you're emailing the interviewee, you want to make sure you understand if there's anyone else who's going to be in the call or in the interview, and just understand that. And if it starts getting to the point where, you know, well, now Bill and Susan need to be there as well, one thing I've learned is it's important to limit the number of people on an interview. If there's absolutely no way around it, that's fine. But many times when John says Bill and Susan need to be there as well, it's better for you to schedule separate calls with Bill and Susan than it is to have the three of them on a call. Not only from a logistical standpoint is it very difficult to get three people, but it's also very easy for the interview to kind of get out of hand. So that's another way you can prep for a successful call.
Very good advice. I do have a follow-up question. You mentioned that you send questions ahead of time, which I think is really smart, and I try to do that too when I do an interview. But occasionally you get somebody that is really busy. We see that a lot, you know, with people in business, and they'll say, oh, you sent the questions ahead of time. I'll just answer them through email. I'm pretty adamant that if I'm conducting an interview, I want it to be either a video conference or over the phone. Do you have any tips for how to politely and diplomatically make that insistence?
Yeah, what I've done in the past, so it's difficult if they've gone ahead and just sent you the responses, right? Because they've taken the time, and the message could be perceived as, well, that's not good enough, I still need to talk to you. And they're going to feel like, well, I just spent 30 minutes typing up some answers, you know, I wish I would have known, or, you know, who do you think you are, that kind of thing. So it depends. If they've taken the time, what I like to do is I always thank them and say, wow, this is great. Thank you for taking the time. This is fantastic. I'd still like to talk with you because I have a few follow-up questions on this. Okay. And then that becomes an easy way to get compliance. Right? Because usually you don't get a response like, well, what are they, and I'll just answer them. Usually at that point they'll comply. But if they say, you know, I'd rather type these up, then it really depends on the specifics of the situation. You know, if it's a case study interview, you have to handle that with a little bit more finesse because that is your client's customer, right? So that's, I would get your client involved. But if it's your client, your main contact or subject matter expert, then always say, like, never disagree with someone. You always want to open up with a really nice, you know, wow, thank you very much for, you know, offering to do that. You know, I found, I use FieldFelt Found. Have you ever heard of that? It's like this thing.
Okay. No, I haven't heard of that as a specific thing, but I find myself using those words a lot too. I found in the past.
It's a format. It's a sequence of points to prevent conflict. What you want to do, feel, is like, hey, I feel you. You know, I understand where you're coming from. I appreciate it. Felt is others have felt the same way. I felt the same way. I know where you're coming from. Found is, but I have found that it's better, more effective, et cetera. So instead of that's not going to work, I really need to talk with you. Bill told me I really need to, you know, nobody wants to get that response. Feel, no. How does that translate into an email response from you? It could be, hey, I really appreciate that. Know where, exactly where you're coming from. I know you're super busy. You know, I find myself in that situation many times, and I'd rather just respond with just some typed answers. Because what we're trying to do here, I've found that it's more effective, much more effective, to get the best information possible through this interview. And then what I do is I kind of cap feel, felt, found at the end with a reminder of the time commitment, and I try to put it in the right context. So I'll say something to the effect of, you know, I promise you this is not going to take more than 20 minutes. I'm a very efficient interviewer, and I know exactly what I want to ask you, as you see here, and I think we can just breeze right through this. Right. So it's
very good
advice. You're making it easy. Yeah.
Thank you. So when you're conducting an interview, do you do a recording or do you take handwritten notes? How do you make sure you're capturing your information?
Yes. So this is something I did early on. And I still do it to this day. I record every call. The reason I do that is I'm not a very fast note taker. So it was out of necessity. Number two, I feel many times like I don't think really fast on my feet. And if you throw some new piece of information at me, it takes a few seconds to process it. And then it finally hits me, oh, man, that's a really key point. By the time I jot it down, so much time has gone by, I've missed 15 seconds of what the prospect said after that, or the client, or whomever. So I find that recording is the way to go. You're going to be able to not only be more efficient, and I'll show you how you can use it, but more relaxed and more attentive. If I know I'm capturing it, I can sit back on my chair instead of being at the edge of my seat. And just think about what they're saying and take only minimal notes. And maybe when I take notes, many times I timestamp it, you know, around 17 minutes in. So I'll put like 17 and then colon and then a key point. And that just tells me, you know, that's where that was in the recording. In terms of recording it, there's never been a better time. There's so many tools, free tools out there.
Yeah.
You know, I like to use freeconferencecall.com because it really is free. It's super easy to give that number to a prospect, and especially if you have a couple of people. You don't have to have three-way calling on your phone line, and everyone can just meet there. And it's got a built-in recording feature, which is very, very reliable. So when you don't have to do anything. You just a star and then a code. It starts recording, and then at the end of the call, just hang up, and you log into your dashboard for freeconferencecall.com, and it's right there. You can download it as an MP3. So I find that's the easiest thing, and that's what you guys do, right? I mean, you're constantly.
That's what we're doing right now.
that's what we're doing right now. This call is so meta, right?
It is really meta.
You're interviewing me on interviewing. And then here's the other great benefit of recording is you can take your recording and send it to a transcriptionist who can then take that and for very little money turn it into text and talk about a huge time saver. This comes in really handy in projects where you're going to use that content, and it's easier to take the words the client used and just cut and paste them into a draft, if that makes sense. So I like to think of it literally as cutting and pasting. I'd rather cut and paste than I would type. Mm-hmm. Have to type that information. So it doesn't make sense every time, but on things like white papers, case studies, articles, those types of things, weren't it's raw material for my draft. I can pay a transcriptionist $1 per recorded minute. So if it's a 30-minute call, that's a $30 job. Will save me so much time. Guys, don't penny pinch here. 30 bucks. You know what? Charge enough for the project that the 30 bucks is not an issue, okay?
Absolutely.
And, you know, otherwise, I remember spending 3-4 hours doing this stuff before. It's
oh, yeah.
Crazy.
It's not even comparable how much you actually save by paying for the transcription service. And like you said, you know, when it comes to recording calls, there's no better time. When it comes to transcribing calls, there's no better time. There are just some amazing services out there where you can get your transcription back in 24 to 48 hours at that dollar a minute, like you said.
Dollar a minute is, if people ask me, where do you go? I've used a couple of different services for the past 2 years, 3 years. I've used rev.com, R-E-V,
yep,
as in revolution. It's becoming kind of like the industry standard.
I can't remember the last time anybody recommended anything other than Rev to me for transcription.
Yeah, it was kind of the Wild West out there, wasn't it? Like nobody had come in and standardized that business, kind of like CarMax did to.
Yep.
It just made it so much simpler. So, yeah, do it. Spend the extra money. Doesn't make sense every time, but when you – it's content – it's so much easier to record and get it transcribed.
So when you're going into an interview, you want to put the person that you're talking to at ease. So what do you do to make sure that you're at ease so you can put the person you're talking to at ease?
Well, so the prepping does a lot of that, right? But the other thing I do is I try not to schedule things that butt up into the call so that I have a little bit of breathing room and I can just relax. If it's a really important call, if it's somebody I don't know or somebody I find a little intimidating, I will take 5 minutes and sit in my reading chair and just close my eyes and take deep breaths and do those things. And then I remind myself, or at least I imagine, that the other person is just as awkward or feels as awkward as I do. Because believe me, I've been on the other side. I've talked to people on the other side. You'd be surprised at how many people are uncomfortable with it, are very introverted. You know, this is not something they do all the time. So I don't know. For me, it helps to at least visualize or imagine that, you know, the other person is hoping that I will lead the call because they're not really sure what to say or do. I have found, by the way, talking about being introverted, I'm somewhere in the middle of introverted and extroverted. But if you're more on the introverted side, let me just tell you something right now that should make you feel better. I find that introverted people are typically better interviewers. I think that it gives you a bit of an edge because your demeanor is typically calmer. You're a better listener. And you just, I don't know, I think you put people at ease. So please, if you feel, oh, I can't do interviews, I'm way too introverted, it scares me, you should know that, and I'm not the only one who believes this, you actually have an edge. The other thing I would say is you got to remind yourself that you're not there to perform. For some reason, and even to this day, when I'm nervous and I ask myself why, when I analyze it, I realize that it's because I feel like I have to perform, like I have to be out there on stage. And when you think about it in an interview, that's like the opposite. you're facilitating something. It's the other person who should be nervous. It's the other person who's going to be on stage and has to perform. All you're doing is showing up and asking questions. And, you know, so you might feel, well, yeah, but I could mess up. You're not going to mess up. If you prepare, you're not going to mess up. It's the other person who has a higher chance of saying the wrong thing or stumbling. So just remind yourself that it's the other person who's going to do 90% of the talking. You just have to facilitate. That's the other 10%. So it's really about getting into that frame of mind.
Good advice. And you mentioned, you know, with the concerns, I'm like you. I'm more in the middle of being introverted and extroverted. I might actually right on the line. But for so many introverts that I know, they really enjoy one-on-one conversations, particularly when they're not small talk conversations. So for interviews, you know, I think when you frame it in that context, for a lot of people who feel introverted, it's really their wheelhouse.
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
So those first few minutes of the interview are often, you know, once it gets rolling, they're usually pretty easy to do, but you have to kick it off right. So do you have advice for making sure that you get off to a great start?
Yes, a few things, actually, because you're right. That's kind of like the when you got to get things moving and cranking. Once you do, I find that you get to the momentum phase very quickly. So it's like, how do I get to that comfortable part of the conversation? It's really the first couple of minutes that could be a little awkward. So you have to prepare for that. I like to establish rapport first, and that's I think it comes naturally to me. But if it doesn't to you, you know, it's not rocket science. Just find something you have in common. I mean, it could be, try not for it to be the weather, you know, what's the weather like over there. But, I mean, if you have to resort to that you can't go wrong with it. If you've done a little bit of research and you know who you're talking with, just find something. Hey, you know, I know you're working on how's that product launch going? Susan told me that, you know, you guys are about to kick it off next week. And that will get the conversation going very, very quickly, because that's an open-ended question, right? Mm-hmm. So they're not going to say, oh, it's going okay. You rarely get that. So have a couple of things ready. If you can keep them, stay out of the weather thing, that's better, but be ready for that. The other thing is be yourself. Don't pretend to be someone you're not. I find that most interviewers, especially the more introverted ones, feel like they have to be somebody else. And I can't stress this enough. Be yourself, because you're going to have an edge anyway if you are yourself, no matter where you fall in the introversion, extroversion spectrum. Mm-hmm. So be yourself, because believe me, people pick up on it. They can tell when you're not. Like you, Heather, we've done several interviews together, I'd never felt, and of course we've had like dinner together at boot camp.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked like when the record button's not on, I don't feel like you're somebody else here than you are, you know, somewhere at boot camp or somewhere else at home. So you might
That's
scream
good.
At your
okay.
kids, you know, but so that's kind of the barometer I use is, you know, of course, the language might be a little different, but you should be yourself. The other thing is, so once you get that out of the way, so it's like rapport, think of it as like 2 minutes. However, don't overdo it, like get to it. I should coin that. Don't overdo it, get
I
to
like
it.
I like it.
Don't overdo
put
it, get to it. Yeah, put it on a shirt, especially if it's someone that was hard to get and someone you promise, hey, it's going to be 20 minutes, that kind of thing. Still do the rapport, but keep it, get to business, okay? Then what I do, kind of the pivot to getting to business is what I call the dentist speech, for lack of a better name. I learned this from when I was doing some sales training years ago. This guy by the name of David Sandler, he created this huge company called Sandler Sales Institute, I think. And he had a lot of really practical tips. And one of the ones was for interviews and sales calls and so forth. He said, you know, when you go to the dentist and they're about to do some, like a root canal, have you ever noticed that the good dentist will say, okay, Mr. Gandia, so I just want to make sure you understand what we're about to do. We're going to do a root canal, and basically what we want to do that for is, you know, because you have this problem, the way it's going to work is I'm going to first sedate you. Don't worry. It's just going to be this, and it's going to be that. It's not going to hurt. You might feel a little pinch. And he walks you through, look, here's what we're about to do.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody starts drilling, you know, right away. That's not a good dentist.
No.
And what it does is it eases the tension, right? It's, even if you talked about this over email, have, you know, your little dentist speech ready. I'll just say, you know, to recap, we're basically writing a before and after story here. I may not use case study because a person may not know what that is. Regarding the challenges you were facing and how ABC Company's product helped you solve those challenges, this is going to be about a 30-minute call. The document I'll draft will end up being a two-page document and will allow ABC Company to show prospective customers how others have used their product successfully. Now, I want to assure you that nothing that you share with me will be published without your consent or your approval. Once we're done here, I'm going to take this information and other information that ABC Company has given me, and I'm going to write a rough draft of the story. Then Jim over at ABC will review the draft, send it over to you for review, and you're free to make any edits or modifications you'd like and send it back to me or to Jim. And we'll make sure those changes are made, and we'll get it back to you for final approval. My point, Susan, is that we, again, are never going to publish anything until you feel 100% comfortable with the draft. Does that make sense? So I get confirmation. So notice how, like, that would put somebody at ease, wouldn't it? You know, especially somebody who's
absolutely
not sure. I don't know what to
share.
Yeah,
it would put them at ease.
Safe.
We put them at ease and also put them in that, okay, we're getting started.
Exactly. You're right. So it does two things. And then the way I my final point to them or question is, oh, by the way, I just want to make sure, is it okay if I record this interview? I'm not going to publish that also. It's just going to allow me to take better notes because I'm a slow note taker. And if I miss any key points, it's going to give me something I can go back to. And that's just a lot more efficient than going back to you over email and so forth. And I've never had anyone who's, you know, said no. Some people have said, well, yeah, that's fine. I just want to make sure, you know, that doesn't go anywhere, that stays private, that kind of thing. But that's about it. So always ask for permission. So that's the dentist speech. The other thing I would say is throughout the conversation, I can't emphasize this enough, you're the leader, so lead. They're looking to you. Don't give them that power or that responsibility. You need to stay in command. So when you prepare, that's why we emphasize preparation so much, you need to be the one taking charge and lead. And, you know, so lead the conversation. I like to start with easier, broader, and non-threatening questions first, regardless of what type of interview it is. Don't go straight into something that it might be a little sensitive, that's maybe a little difficult to explain. Start with easy stuff that kind of primes the pump, if you will, and then you can move into more specific questions. The other thing I would say in terms of kicking things off and getting that momentum is stick to the order of the questions that you pre-submitted to that person. So that way they have notes, and many times they will have some notes that they took. It's easier for them, and you don't make them nervous because you're jumping all over the place, and you know they want to sound good and look good. So stick to the order. And those questions, by the way, should be kind of in a logical order. The good news is, you know, you guys are writers. So you already know how to kind of structure information. That's one advantage you have. And make sure that the questions you present to them are in a logical order.
That makes good sense. All right. So at this point, we've got our interview started. We've got a good rapport. Things are kind of going along. Sometimes, though, something unexpected will happen in an interview, or you kind of get off on a tangent. You mentioned leading, so I guess I'm digging a little bit deeper into that. How do you keep the interview focused and also make sure that you're really uncovering the good stuff? So you're not just skimming the surface, you're really getting into the depths of what you need to know.
Yeah, so what will happen many times is, especially with a very enthusiastic interviewee, is they'll start jumping kind of all over the place. I find this particularly true with case study interviews because so this is a very specific tip for case studies, but you'll see where it can apply elsewhere. When I submit the questions for a case study, I start with background questions, then kind of challenge questions, challenges they were having, questions about the journey they went through to find a solution, how they made the decision, then how the implementation of that decision or that product or service went, and then what the results have been. So I present them in that order.
Mm-hmm.
What will happen many times is when you're in kind of questions about the challenges, the prospect will automatically tie, like, here's your challenge, and here's, like, what's happening now. It's
yes.
just kind of a very natural thing. It's like, we have this challenge, but now, man, we're down 6%. Like, in 2 weeks, we were down 6%. And it's okay. Let the prospect do that. However, if he or she starts going down that rabbit hole and they start giving you too much about another area that you're going to inquire about later, bring them back, but bring them back gently. And just say, wow, that's fantastic. So here's what I'd like to do, Jim, if you don't mind. I definitely want to ask you more about that in a few minutes. But let me go back to, you know, this challenge. Can you tell me more about, you know, what that was causing inside the organization? Like, what other problems was it creating? So I just gently bring them back. Again, kind of feel, felt, found in a way. It's like, hey, that's great, fantastic, I took that down. Hey, I'm going to ask you about that, but let me go back to this because I have a follow-up question on that. Or it could be your next question, whatever. So you'll have to do that a couple of times. And the key thing is just to do it gently. And follow-up questions, that's another key thing, is have a few standbys. I find that in most cases, especially after you get the hang of this, you're going to know, especially if you're recording the call so you're able to listen to the person,
mm-hmm.
you're going to know what kind of questions to ask. So they throw something in there, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. Tell me more about that. You know, what was that again? Like, it's something maybe they thought it was no big deal, and they throw it out there about this big improvement that happened or this big golden nugget of content as kind of a throwaway, and you're going, wait a minute, this could be like the whole, this is like the core of the interview, and I didn't even know about
yep.
this. So those are obvious, but I always like to have a few kind of standby formulae questions on hand. And at first I used to have these written down in a sheet, like a cheat sheet. One was, tell me more about that. It's like, oh, interesting, tell me more about that. Or how did X impact Y? Can you tell me more about how this impacted that? And then the third one that I always had was, can you give me an example of that?
And
what will happen is you'll get the context, right? You'll get the context,
mm-hmm.
you'll get the application. And many times I find that the richest content for the interview comes as a result of you asking a follow-up question. You thought it was going to be this
mm-hmm.
other thing, but then you ask a follow-up question, and there's like this whole part of the story that you had no idea was there that could make all the difference.
Absolutely. And the tell me more, that's such a useful phrase in so many situations, whether you're talking to somebody that you just met at a networking event. If you want to get on somebody's good side when they say something that's of interest to them, hit them with a tell me more. They'll think you're wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, there's several versions of that, right? It doesn't have to be, no, tell me more about that. If that doesn't feel natural, or if you keep asking it, you know, it's obviously going to feel a little annoying.
Yeah.
Many times I don't have to ask a question. I may say, what? 26%? That's crazy. And that's an invitation to tell me more.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's fantastic. You know, what? Or I might say, what were you expecting? You know, so it's 26%. What were you expecting? So that's kind of a context question. What were we expecting? You know, 10% at best. 26%, you know, that just blew things out of the water. And then, you know, let me tell you why I think that happened. And so definitely that. And then the I guess there's one other big this is kind of a follow-up question, but it's also a technique.
Mm-hmm.
I call it the so what trick. And what will happen many times is they'll report a benefit. For instance, let's go back to this 26% example. 26% improvement in production line errors, like 26% reduction in production line errors. Wow, that's fantastic. Don't assume that that's the story. Like, don't assume, wow, this is going to be it. This is really kind of the big thing we need to highlight. Ask a so what question that will tell you what that meant to that company, to the organization, to the business, or whatever. And the way I ask it is 26%. That's huge. So what did that lead to, or how was that able to improve the business, or what impact did that improvement have on X or Y or Z? Okay, because a benefit many times is not really the full story. You need the context. It's like, okay, great. So you have this improvement. Well, what did that mean to the business? What did that mean to this department? What did that mean for morale? And don't worry if some of these things are intangible, if they're qualitative instead of quantitative. Many times that's where the real magic lies in asking these so what questions. You don't want to ask so what, but some variation of so what is what's going to do the trick. So ask so what question. I've said this before, but I can't emphasize it enough. Don't try to take notes on everything. Some people tell me, well, I'm a super fast note taker. I think that's great. I'd rather see you pay more attention, take minimal notes, record it, and use a transcription, and timestamp your notes. That's going to be a lot more efficient. Plus, if you have the transcript, you can always use Control F or Command F on a Mac to find keywords. Oh, I remember she talked about, you know, the yogurt line, production line. At one point, you can type in yogurt, Control F, yogurt, and go straight to that point in the transcript that was maybe 35 pages long. That's super, super efficient. Mm-hmm. I just got a couple of little practical things as I think of them. I like to introduce a 2-second pause when the interviewee is done explaining something. I say I try because I don't always do that. But if you introduce a pause, two things. They may not be done with a thought, or there's something else they want to say, but, you know, they didn't want to, like, just hog the conversation. So by putting that pause in there, you won't interrupt them, okay? Also, don't feel like you need to add commentary. This is something I've always struggled with. If I'm asking you a question, Heather, and you say something, sometimes it makes sense for me to then add to that, right? Mm-hmm. But don't feel you have to add to it every time. So if they say, you know, this 26% and this, it had this impact on morale, and then sales went up and her returns went down. So yes, all the so what questions. You don't have to say, wow, that's great. You can, but don't feel like you have to add to it or agree. Or sometimes that's good, but sometimes it's good to go to the next question. And I would say there comes a point in the interview when you want to kind of signal to the interviewee that you're going to be wrapping up. And the way I like to do that is, well, two different ways. One is, well, Jim, again, I would just want to be very respectful of your time. You know, we only got a couple of minutes left. Before we finish here, I just had one more question. And that way you're letting them know, look, I'm holding to my promise. This is my last question. Don't worry, I haven't lost track of time. Or I might say something, hey, okay, Jim, well, as we wrap up, I wanted to ask you, you know, just a couple of quick questions, that sort of thing. It's a nice cue for them, especially if they're really busy and you promise a certain amount of time, or if they are just yapping away, this is a great way to let them know we need to start wrapping this up.
Yeah.
and then finally, many times I will ask, especially if I'm not really sure if we have, like, you know, everything I need, I'll just give them an opportunity to tell me if there's something else, you know, that I didn't ask them about. And I'll just say something to the effect of, what didn't I ask you about X that, you know, you think is worth discussing or telling me about, that kind of thing. And many times I'll say, you know, I can't think of anything else. I mean, I think this is pretty thorough. I think I gave you everything. But sometimes they'll think and say, you know, I guess it would be the fact that, you know, I've talked about efficiency and this and that, but one of the problems we were having was retention, employee retention. And, I mean, I can't really prove it because we don't have the numbers, but we have definitely seen a difference with employee retention. Our people are just excited, whatever. And suddenly it's like, man, this is great stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's just another opportunity to bring out golden nuggets that maybe you didn't know about, even with all the prep work you did.
Excellent stuff. I want to add something, if it's okay, to your – you talked about taking basic notes only and using the transcription. I am a really fast note taker, but I discovered over the years that what happens when I'm trying to take notes and not do transcription is two things happen. One, I miss the opportunity for follow-up questions because I'm trying to take notes, and then I don't realize, oh, hey, there was a golden opportunity to, you know, ask this follow-up question right there. It'll occur to me later. But I missed it because I was too busy trying to take notes. Or I'll have notes that end up losing some of their context. So I think that's such a valuable point that you make, to just really listen attentively, keep your notes, you know, to a basic, just kind of timestamping things, and then use that transcription.
Yeah, great point. Something that I do sometimes is I will take notes visually in the way of a mind map. Right? It will be like I'll do like a bubble and I'll write C for challenge. And then it's like hub and spoke. So that's the hub. And then I'll do all these spokes. And one of them was this 26% reduction in errors. And then out of that one, I may draw some more spokes. And those are the so what's. So it created this, that, and this other thing. And then I have special notation for things such as follow-up questions. So if they talked about one of these side benefits, I may write kind of draw a spoke out of that and do FU as in follow-up. As in follow-up, nothing else. As in follow-up. and maybe put like a little star and then a quick notation of a question I want to ask. So later I'll know, hey, let me ask you a follow-up question on what you said earlier about this, and then I have the context because visually I can see where it fits in what they shared with me. But I'm very visual, so mind map note-taking helps me many times, and the whole thing won't be a mind map, but many things will, especially if we're talking about a process or a series of events or kind of a multifaceted story.
Mm-hmm.
I find it easier than straight note-taking because, like, you can't insert something. I guess if you're using Word, but I'm a paper and pencil kind of person.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do that.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great technique. All right. So we've been talking interviews mostly in the context of case studies. And case studies to me are just, they're so much fun. It's almost like they aren't even really work.
Yeah.
So they're definitely a project that I recommend to writers, particularly writers that kind of have a hand up to anything that's too salesy or persuasive. And you've actually created a program to teach people how to write these case studies. And I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about your program.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's what I've done, guys. You could probably gather from what I said earlier that I'm really big into just kind of documenting things. So when I made that transition, I really wanted to document how I did it because I wanted to make life easier for other people. I was lucky enough to have landed a lot of case study work kind of on year two or so of my business when I was still doing it part-time. And one of my clients needed a lot of case studies, kind of on a recurring basis. So I got a ton of practice. And one of the things that I decided to do early on was document what I was doing because case studies are the kind of thing that they pay really well, but only if you can make it really efficient. Because, you know, a $1,500 project is great only if you can do it quickly. If it takes you 40 hours, that doesn't really come out to a lot of money. So I realized, you know what, this is something I can systemize. I need to codify this. I've been kind of winging it, but how can I reverse engineer this and kind of create a recipe for it? So that's what I did because I wanted to do these as quickly as possible. What I ended up doing was My fees held steady, but I was able to bring this down to about 5 to 7 hours per case study.
Nice.
And only because of this process that I documented, because it could very easily get out of hand. And that's what I created. So Rebecca contacted me a few years ago and said, hey, you know, we don't have anything on case studies. I know you've read a lot of them. You know, what do you think? I said, perfect, because I actually got a lot of the stuff already documented. I'd love to share it. I think a lot of what I do is very different and unique to me. I'm happy to share it. And that's what I did. I created a program called Writing Case Studies, How to Make a Great Living by Helping Clients Tell Their Stories. And it's a very much a step-by-step process with a lot of things that you're not going to find anywhere else. It's how do you do this efficiently, but it goes beyond that, because then I talk about, okay, how do you, even as a beginner, present yourself as a real professional? Because it's all about confidence, right? If you can just show the client that you got your act together and that you have the process, man, that really increases the confidence in you and, of course, the confidence you have in yourself. So, it's out there. Really proud of it. Lots of people have taken it. The feedback is fantastic. I hear from people all the time how it's helped them write these pieces really well and really efficiently. I think we got a special deal on it right now, I believe.
We do. It's a fantastic deal. You'll save $300 if you order this week, and this is only for Wealthy Web Writer members and subscribers. Now, that's like 60% off, so you're actually saving more than you're spending. It doesn't get any better than that. And you can tell from this call that Ed is a great teacher. He really has all his ducks in a row. He makes everything very accessible without dumbing anything down. So you'll be able to present yourself very sophisticated, but you're really going to have a great handle on how to write these case studies once you move through his program. So you're going to get an email today letting you know about this deal, but also on the event page where you found the dial-in instructions for this call. Within the next half hour, I will make sure that there is a link there that you can click through. So really easy to find and take advantage of, and I highly recommend it, particularly if you're looking for a type of project that kind of lets you tell those stories that is a lot of fun to write and doesn't take too long and actually pays really well. It's like the best of all worlds.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is the kind of thing that if you can have in your library when you get the opportunity, you'll have the formula. Like, you'll have the process
exactly
ready to go. And that's what you want, because it's going to take time to get used to it, but it's a lot more difficult if you have to wing it and do it from scratch.
Absolutely. Ed, I want to thank you so much for talking with us today about conducting interviews, because I do think that is such a valuable skill that every writer should have. Before we wrap up, do you have any parting advice for our audience today?
There we go. Is there something I didn't ask you? I love it. Here's what I would say, guys. If you can develop this interview skill, and I hope you can now realize that this is very doable and it has nothing to do with your personality. And if anything, if it scares you, that's probably a good sign, because you probably have the temperament to do a good job with this. I really do believe it's an undervalued skill. This is something that you can use no matter what, no matter where you end up going, what you end up doing, or what type of work you end up doing. This is a soft skill that I think we undervalue in this society. If you can develop, which takes practice, but if you can develop it, it can take you really, really far. So I encourage you to just go for it, develop the skill, and practice it. And I'd love to hear from you guys if this has helped you and how. That's always very rewarding to get that feedback.
Excellent. Well, Ed, thank you. To our listeners, thank you for joining us today, and I hope everybody has a fantastic week.
Likewise. Thanks for having me, Heather.